Chapter 6. Elith's senses exploded into full wakefulness, but she held herself completely still and kept her breathing deep and even. The room was lit only by the trickle of graying pre-dawn light from the window. She felt the man's presence more than she saw it. From the little she could see, he seemed to be sitting in the chair at the foot of the bed, with the back against an adjacent wall, facing the door. He didn't appear to be watching her sleep, so much as keeping watch while she slept. That distinction was small comfort, though, given his silent invasion. At least as long as he thought she was asleep, Elith still had the chance to observe and to prepare. Her mind unfolded possibilities, began forming plans of action, but she didn't have the chance to carry any of them out.
"A terrible way to wake, I know," the man said quietly, "and a worse first impression."
Somehow, he detected that she was awake. Elith drew herself upright cautiously toward the head of the bed and edged to the side, creating space between the two of them, ready to spring up if necessary. The man didn't move. Her baton was just a quick reach away, but if he'd intended to hurt her, he could have already done so. She would wait. For now.
"How'd you get in here?"
"Through the door."
"It was locked."
"It was," he said.
His profile changed slightly in the gloom. He had turned his head slightly to look at her obliquely, as though doing so directly would be too much of an impropriety. The most polite of intruders.
"I could lock it again if it'd make you feel better," he added.
"What do you want?"
Elith asked.
"Word reached me that we had a guest. I decided I needed to meet you, for myself."
"And you couldn't think of a less intrusive way to do it?"
"I suppose I could have crashed into a nearby mountain to get your attention, but unfortunately I am without a ship."
He said it flatly, but there was a curl of a smile in the words. His accent was different from that of the others she had met thus far, less pronounced, thinner, somehow. It wasn't educated, precisely, but his pronunciation gave the impression of an elevated level of knowledge, the breadth and depth of which he was careful to conceal.
"If I could have avoided that," Elith said, "I would have, I assure you."
"It's a big mountain. One would assume it'd be easy to see, and therefore easy to avoid."
"One might also assume the fact that I crashed would make it obvious it wasn't intentional."
"Well, it would seem one could assume many things if one were foolish enough."
There was something playful about the man's demeanor, almost as if he were enjoying some prank or inside joke. But Elith sensed danger, too, and not just from the unsettling circumstances. There was a sharpness to the air, an electric uncertainty, the feeling of encountering a lone wolf in the wild. He was testing her, listening intently.
"And I assume it would be foolish to ask you to leave?" Elith said.
"Not to ask," the man replied.
Apart from the slight turning of his head, the man still hadn't moved, but Elith couldn't help feeling like he had the upper hand at every turn of the conversation. And that was a feeling she couldn't abide. She wasn't sure how long he'd been sitting in the darkened room. She didn't know how much his eyes had adjusted and how well he could see her. To be on the safe side, she casually shifted on the bed, leaning forward slightly and masking the subtle positioning of her hand nearer the lamp on the nightstand.
"What if I screamed instead?"
"I was half expecting it when you first woke," he said.
"Now it would just seem forced. And to be frank, unbecoming of a woman of your obvious caliber."
"You can tell a lot about a woman just from watching her sleep, huh?"
"It sounds unflattering when you say it like that."
"I'd be curious to hear how you could make it sound any other way, stranger."
The man chuckled and turned to look at her fully, though the room was still too dark for her to get a sense of his appearance.
"I am sorry, Aliyah. Despite my dramatic entrance, I'm not here to upset you. I just wanted to talk."
"And if I don't feel like talking?" she asked.
"That would be disappointing," the man said, "but understandable. Unfortunately, our time together is limited, and I don't expect to have the opportunity again."
Aleth tried to deduce what she could from the man's words and his manner of speech. His accent was almost no accent at all. Trained at the academy, maybe, or former Ascendance personnel, whose time out of service had softened the edges of the usual crisp professionalism off his syllables. "Out of all the mountains in the galaxy, why this one?" he asked. His mention of the galaxy raised a warning flag in her mind. Nothing about her crash, her ship, or herself should have given away the fact that she was from off-world. If he'd said it more casually, she could have taken it as exaggeration for effect, but he struck her as a man who was carefully intentional about his choice of words.
"What do you mean?" Aleth said. "Your accident. Why here?"
"It was the mountain that happened to be under me when I fell," she answered. "I don't understand the question."
"You almost sound like a local."
"Almost. Close enough for most."
"But you're not from here."
"Not from anywhere on Quell." Aleth made no response, neither confirming nor denying the claim.
"Things out of their place have a certain quality about them," he continued. "A quality made stronger by greater distance from where they belong, and you, Elias, seem very far from home. So, why here?"
"It isn't where I intended to be," she said. "And if your friends upstairs had let me go on my way as I requested, I wouldn't be here at all."
The man sat silently for a moment, watching her in the darkness. She knew he couldn't read her expression closely, but the effect was still unsettling. He had a hint of the deep language about him, but none of its latent power within. The scent of smoke on one who had witnessed a forest fire, but had never been among its flames. And there was something evasive about the man's presence. Her mind seemed to slide off of even the few details she could gather.
"Hawk told me you were a tough one to read," the man said finally. "And he's sharp. A genuinely good man. I like him.
I think I like you too. I wonder if we could be friends."
"Maybe," Aleth said. "Chances would have been better if you hadn't let yourself into my room while I was sleeping."
"Not going to let that go, are you?
Not until you give me something better."
"Are you here to kill Eth Amuin?" he asked,
his tone just as quiet and friendly, the sudden directness of the question jarring. There was no doubt then that he intended to keep her off balance.
I'm sorry, what?
"Eth Amuin, are you here to kill him?" The fact that nothing in her extensive pre-mission research had mentioned Eth Amuin made it somewhat safe to assume he wasn't widely known, whoever he was.
"I don't know who that is," she answered, "but I'm not here to hurt anyone."
"To exist is to risk harming others, and your arrival has now created the possibility of your absence.
What if I like you so much it hurts me to let you leave? Then I would say that you have intimacy issues."
The man laughed.
"Truer than you know," he said, "and I'd like to believe you, Elia."
"Then why don't you?"
The speed with which he moved was shocking. He was on his feet in an instant, so fast that Aleth would have been at his complete mercy had she not been on guard. But she'd been ready. At his first sudden motion, Aleth closed her eyes tightly and tapped the lamp, briefly splashing the room in light as she spun from the bed. A half second later, she tapped the lamp off and snatched up her baton, stepped across the room to the closet. She had only a handful of seconds to take advantage of the man's temporary blindness, to judge his reaction, and to act accordingly.
"That is why," he said.
He was still standing by his chair, having done nothing else besides raise one hand. Neither a reflexive flinch nor an attack interrupted, just a mild sort of gesture to placate her, as though physical conflict never occurred to him as a possibility. She could see him blinking in the darkness, and he'd clearly lost track of her. His head, slightly lowered, swiveled slowly between the bed and the door.
"Assuming you're still in the room," he added.
Aleth kept her place by the closet, diagonally from the man, with all the space between them that the small room could afford. Her positioning helped reset her sense of footing in the situation. They stood now as equals.
As you said, she answered, one can assume many things.
His head tipped up at the sound of her voice, turned to locate her. A few moments passed as his eyes readjusted to the darkness, and Elith waited to see what would come next.
You're taller than I expected, he said. You're shorter than I thought, she replied.
They were nearly the same height. If she hadn't been barefoot, Elith may have even been slightly taller.
I have poor posture, he said. He stood up straighter, gained maybe a half inch of height,
and then a moment later, to her surprise, sat back down, completely ceding the power dynamic of the room.
Normal people don't walk away from crashes to go hike in the wilderness, he said casually, or use lamps for tactical advantage. I never claimed to be normal. Then you understand my concerns. No, I really don't. I already told you I never wanted to be here. Your people brought me against my will, which would be an impressive way to infiltrate a protected area, and a ridiculous amount of trouble to go through. If I really were here to take out your friend, I'd have a better story. So why lie to them about being from Quell? Because my business is nobody else's. I could make it mine.
There was an abrupt darkness to those words, a shift in energy. It wasn't a threat, exactly, but there was no mistaking the implication. And again, Elith had a glimpse of genuine danger in the man. It was no empty posturing. She stood for a few seconds in silence and then returned to the bed and perched on the edge of it, using her body language to soften the moment. I never said I was from Quell, she said quietly. The man chuckled at that. Another span of silence passed, and Elith had the impression that he was no longer evaluating her current actions so much as he was reflecting on everything he'd already observed.
It's possible I've mistaken you for someone else, he said finally, and sounded almost disappointed. But I still think we could be friends. Unfortunately, I'm not sure I expect to see you again.
Elith wasn't quite sure what to make of the statement, but it didn't matter. A moment later, she became aware of a distant rumbling from outside, growing rapidly in volume and intensity. Vehicles approaching. Instinctively, she looked to the tiny window, hoping for a glimpse of what was descending upon them. Moments later, a beam of white light flashed briefly across the ground outside, followed by some manner of commotion.
"Don't worry," the man said. "They aren't here for you."
He stood up again, a little straighter this time, as if remembering their exchange, ran a hand down the front of his shirt to smooth it, and then bowed to her.
"Goodbye, Elia. Thank you for the company. These days I don't often get to meet new people."
He turned then and left the room, politely closing the door behind him. When she heard him walking up the stairs, she slipped out and quietly followed. The man had already exited the stairwell when she reached it, and she could hear low voices from upstairs. She crept up, keeping close to the wall, and then stopped a couple of steps from the top and leaned forward, low to the landing, peering around the doorframe. A group of a half dozen people stood in the open area, with the man who had interrogated her standing roughly in the middle of them. His back was to her, but she could tell from his gestures and the way he looked from person to person that he was giving some quiet explanation, or maybe apology. He was the shortest among them, 5'7" or 5'8" by her estimation, and his build suggested he'd be more at home in a library than doing any sort of heavy labor. She could only see him in occasional profile, but his olive bronze skin had the weather-beaten look of a man used to long and frequent exposure to the elements, and the vibrance of his cheeks suggested strong health and abundant energy. His shaggy hair, mostly dark brown, with elusive tint of red, had begun to frost with gray, as had the stubbled beard that looked more like the product of neglect than any sort of planned feature. Taken altogether, his appearance made it impossible to judge his age. He could have been a younger man, prematurely gray, or an older man of uncommonly good health. Hawk and Ame stood off to one side, apart from the group. The others were exactly the kind of people she'd been hoping to avoid. There was authority in their look, but also subdued anger and perhaps embarrassment. It was the look of an experienced security detail that had lost their charge. Seeing them surrounding the man shifted him into a new light to Elith's eyes. He wasn't the head of their team. He was the object of their protection. The detail closed in around him. No one touched him, but their intent was obvious. He moved toward the rear door, head down, shoulders rounded, all the power she had sensed in him deflated and subdued. He almost didn't even look like the same person. Watching him now, she couldn't decide which of the two was the real expression of his being. Just before he exited, the man glanced back over his shoulder at her hiding place. His features were sharp, distinctive, if not particularly attractive. He flashed a quick schoolboy grin as though he knew she was watching. And then he was gone. Hawk and Ame stood by, both completely submissive to the others, heads down, eyes averted. It was strange to see them in that manner, particularly Hawk, who had seemed only the day before to be a man who would kneel before no one. They both stood quietly after the door had closed. But as soon as the vehicles outside lifted off, Ame turned and grabbed Hawk's arm with both hands, her eyes wide with shock and a broad smile illuminating her face.
"Are you kidding me?" she said. "Are you kidding me? Did all of that actually happen, or am I asleep right now?"
Hawk smiled and gave a bewildered shrug.
"I can't believe that actually happened," Ame continued. "Sirin is going to be so mad he missed all of this."
"You know he won't believe us," Hawk said.
Elith emerged from the stairwell, and they both reacted, tense, as though she'd caught them in an intimate moment.
"Who was that man?" she asked.
Ame looked at Hawk. It took a moment before he answered.
"That was the man who changed my life," he said. "That was Eth Amoin."
Chapter 7.
"I didn't realize you were old friends," Elith said, "from the way you reacted to having him in your house."
They were seated on the front porch of the cabin, Elith wrapped in a blanket, Hawk next to her, and Ame on his other side, each with a hot drink in hand as ward against the morning chill. The gray horizon was just beginning to warm with the first colors of dawn, the stars slowly ceding their watch to the greater light to come. After all the excitement, no one had been interested in trying to go back to sleep.
"I wouldn't say we're friends, exactly, and the way things work up here," Hawk said.
He started to say one thing, then seemed to think better of it, and instead added,
"He doesn't get out as much as he used to.
Too famous now?
Something like that. Let's just say his house has a lot more fences than this one," Ame said, "and not as many neighbors."
Elith filed that information away. Eth Amuin, living in protected isolation.
"He ever show up in your room when you were sleeping?" she asked.
"He shows up a lot of places you wouldn't expect," Hawk said. "But no, that was a new one as far as I know."
The conversation dropped off for a few moments, as though that brief exchange had answered everything Elith could want to know about the whole strange situation. She tried to keep her tone light and conversational, feigning casual curiosity rather than intent interest.
"So, he's what, King of the Mountain then?"
"You sure ask a lot of questions," Hawk said.
"It's not every day I wake up to a strange man in my room, just trying to get a handle on him."
"That's one thing you'll never do,"
he replied, his tone neutral, without hostility, merely stating a fact. He watched the horizon for a span, and Ella thought maybe she'd gotten all she would out of him. Talking seemed to take more effort for him than running miles over the mountain. But then he took a breath, sighed, and said,
"But he's a good man,
I know it all seems strange to an outsider like you. But if you knew Eth Amuin like we do, it wouldn't be as hard to understand. Or I guess you wouldn't feel like you had to try so hard to understand.
Eleth was still trying to decide how to steer the conversation when Ame chimed in a few moments later.
He just has a way of making you feel the truth of a thing.
At Ame's description, Eleth felt a shadow of something familiar. A memory fell over her, laden with the impression of power and authority she felt during her first lessons at the feet of her instructors. Words founded within the deep language bore a significance and richness of meaning almost too substantial to bear. In the brief time Eleth had spent with him, she hadn't sensed any of the falseness of a trickster, the arrogance of a would-be ruler, or the sickness of thought that inevitably thrived in a cult. But the indicators couldn't be ignored. She needed to dig deeper.
"It's hard to explain," Hawk said. "Be a whole lot easier to understand if you just ask him yourself."
"I don't think I'm going to have the chance," Eleth said. "He told me he didn't expect he'd see me again."
Hawk nodded and took another drink, eyes still scanning the horizon. He hadn't looked at her since they'd sat down.
"Does that mean I can leave?" she asked.
"Soon," Hawk said. "Detail thinks it'll be safe to move you in a couple of days."
Eleth noted the mention of the security detail. That they were responsible for Eth Amuin's protection had been obvious from how they'd arrived and whisked him away. But it sounded as though their authority extended to more than just the one man.
"The detail? His personal bodyguards, I assume?"
"Yeah."
"They're in charge around here?"
Eleth asked.
Hawk shrugged, and after a moment said, "They're interested in what's best for everyone."
"At least that's what they say if you ask them,"
Ame added, not quite under her breath.
"I thought everyone was concerned about me getting picked up by the local authorities."
"Everyone was concerned about you being the local authorities. But as it appears, that's not the case. We figure we'll just sit tight for a bit, and then everyone can go back to their own business."
"What makes you think they won't be hanging around looking for me?" she asked.
"Because they shut work down before dark last night?"
Hawk said. "I don't think they're trying too hard to find out what happened."
"Wish I'd known that yesterday," Eleth said. "Would have saved me a trip up the mountain."
"Worked out all right for you. That's one of the reasons the detail decided you weren't a spy."
"How's that?"
"Figured if the Ascendants set all this up just to get one of their own inside, they'd be making a bigger show out of how surprised and concerned they were over the crash. The fact that they're doing shoddy work down there is a good sign they don't have a vested interest in what happens to you."
"Trouble is, we're going to have to spend the next couple of days tracking down stray drones that wandered off from the crash site," Ame said.
"Good for me, I guess. But I still don't understand the relationship,"
Eleth said.
"Local authority is the local authority. How is it that you got them to agree to stay off the mountain?"
"Always with the questions," Hawk said, waving a hand.
But his tone suggested he wasn't as irritated as he was pretending.
"I don't know all the legal arrangements, but the mountain's classified as a private preserve. I'd guess that has something to do with it."
Another oddity. None of that information showed up in any of the research she'd done. Nothing in any of the records she'd scoured had shown the stretch of wilderness outside Orinnes as anything noteworthy.
"We were always a low-traffic area," Ame said. "Detail really started tightening up the past few years, though. People got serious about our borders."
Eleth recalled Eth Amuin's sudden question about whether or not she was here to kill him.
"A threat against the old man?" she asked. "An attempt on his life?"
Neither Hawk nor Ame responded, and Eleth got the sense she was treading too heavily. She pulled the conversation back to what she hoped was safer ground.
"Well, what about you guys?" she asked. "You spend all your time just running striders all over the place?"
"Pretty much," Hawk answered.
"We're wardens."
Ella thought back to her initial standoff with Hawk and the conflict she'd sensed in him as he'd wrestled with what to do with her. He was both protector and caretaker.
That makes sense, Elith said, and it explains a lot.
Yeah, like what?
Ame asked.
Like why you take such good care of everything around you, she answered, even when it's a stranger who fell out of the sky.
So you know all about us now, Ame said. Your turn.
My turn what?
What's your deal?
Sorry, Elith said, shaking her head. I'd really rather not talk about it.
You already got like 1,000 times more words out of Hawk than he usually uses in a year,
Ame said.
You owe us.
All right. Short version, Elith said. I made a long series of bad decisions. Finally tried to make a good one for a change. I thought maybe I could get myself pointed in the right direction, get a new start if I had somewhere out of the way to think for a while.
Maybe you aren't in the wrong place after all, Hawk said quietly.
Elith wondered how she was meant to take that, but didn't have long to ponder. Shortly after Hawk's comment, the door to the cabin opened, and Sarin appeared in the doorway, balancing a mug and plate in one hand.
Got the whole crew up early this morning, huh?
He said, jerking his head Elith's direction. She couldn't tell exactly what was on the plate, but whatever it was, there was a lot of it. Sarin plodded out, leaving the door halfway open behind him, and plopped down next to Ame, facing the horizon like the rest of them.
What did I miss?
Ame looked at Hawk. Hawk sipped his drink and then shook his head.
Nothing much, he said.
Eth Amuin stopped by, Ame said.
Sure, okay, Sarin said with a scoff.
He took a few bites of food, each the size of which fell somewhere beyond uncouth and just shy of revolting.
You hear from Kitu yet?
He asked a few moments later, around a bite of his breakfast.
Yeah, he rolled in a little after midnight, Hawk answered. Went home to sleep in his own bed around 2 or 3, I guess. Surprised he's not here yet, Sarin said. Not like him to miss a sunrise.
Even a machine like Kitu needs more than 3 hours of sleep, Ame said, especially after a day of hard running.
Nah, a voice said from inside the cabin. If it's a solid 3, I'm good.
Kitu stepped out and made a show of closing the door behind him.
And now I understand why I keep finding bugs in all the windows, Sarin, he said.
Ha, I knew you'd be right behind me, Sarin said.
Morning all,
Kitu said. He gave Elith a quick, shallow bow.
Elia?
Good morning, Kitu,
Elith said. He walked over next to Sarin and leaned against the rail of the porch, arms folded. It was only then that Elith realized the significance of what was unfolding. There were only 4 chairs, and this was a morning ritual.
Kitu, I'm in your seat, she said, starting to stand.
But he waved her off.
No, he said. I'm good. Just spent a couple hours lying down. Feels good to be up stretching my legs.
Elith held her half crouch for a moment, unsure whether to accept the kindness or insist on relinquishing the seat.
Stand if you want, Ame said, but he won't take it no matter what you do.
She hadn't recognized the moment they'd invited her to share. Now that she did, choosing to stand seemed tantamount to a refusal of their hospitality. She nodded and sank back down into the chair.
Well, thank you, she said.
That was the last that anyone spoke for several minutes as the sky grew lighter with the fast approaching sunrise. The sounds of the waking mountain forest sharpened in their silence, interrupted only by the occasional sound of Sarin finishing his breakfast. He was the one who finally spoke again.
Here she comes, he said.
And sure enough, as though his words were what released her, for an instant the sky flashed a fleeting blue-green, barely perceptible, and then the first sliver of Quell's sun appeared on the horizon. The 5 of them sat together for another stretch, silent witnesses to the birth of a new day. After a time, Hawk spoke.
All right, folks, he said.
Guess that's our cue. He drained the remainder of his drink and then stood and turned to address Elith.
We've got a few things to discuss together, work-related.
He didn't ask her to leave, but the implication was clear enough.
Sure,
Elith said, rising and turning to go inside.
Just be a few minutes, he said.
Elith returned to the common area of the cabin and sat in one of the oversized chairs. She couldn't hear any of the discussion, but from what she could see through the window, she guessed the four wardens were deciding how to keep an eye on her while handling their other duties for the day. After about 10 minutes, they came inside. Kitu and Sarin continued straight on out the back door. Hawk stopped in front of her.
So, Hawk said, you've got two jobs today. Stay out of sight, stay out of trouble. Ame's going to keep you company. Do me a favor and keep it simple for us. It's just a couple of days, and you really don't want to make Ame chase after you.
Elith glanced over at the lean, muscled Ame in her short sleeves despite the morning chill.
You're right, she said. I really don't.
Hawk nodded and then headed off to whatever tasks awaited him. After they'd gone, Elith looked over at Ame, waiting for some indication of what she should do now. Ame shrugged.
Day's yours, she said. You can go anywhere you like as long as it's inside the cabin.
Can't get outside.
You didn't get enough of that yesterday?
Elith chuckled. World looks a little different when you're not on the run.
Let's see how today goes, Ame said. Maybe you can get a tour tomorrow if you're still here.
That sounds ominous. I thought Hawk said it'd be a couple of days.
Yeah, maybe. Could be sooner. Just depends on what the detail decides. Hawk probably didn't want to get your hopes up.
House arrest, then. Not an ideal situation, but there was no reason to try to argue. Ame hadn't exactly warmed to Elith, but she seemed less guarded than she had the day before, and Elith didn't want to give her cause to revert.
Tough day yesterday, Ame added. A little forced rest will do you some good.
Elith nodded, while her mind worked. With all she'd seen and heard in her short time among these people, she knew she had to investigate the land within the borders of the preserve while she could. If the strain were at work, she would see its symptoms in the plants, the soil, the water. But she needed her cover intact. If it turned out that this was all a dead end, she didn't want to be remembered as anything more than a lost girl who got a little help along the way.
Might not be so bad, I guess, she said. I could probably sleep for 2 days straight anyway.
Nothing stopping you, Ame replied. I might just do that then, Elith said. After a few minutes of lingering in the common area, she excused herself and returned to her room. She sat quietly on her bed for a time, mentally reviewing everything she'd observed about the cabin thus far, from the brief glimpses she'd gotten of the exterior to the more thorough examination she'd been able to give the inside. There'd been no obvious routes for sneaking out easily. The window in her room wasn't made to open. But architecture was just another system, and every system had its vulnerabilities. There were still two rooms she hadn't investigated on the lower floor. Elith grabbed her flashlight and multi-tool. Both rooms were still locked, but she made short work of those. The first room she checked was another bedroom, smaller than hers, and with three bunks crammed into it. The second, however, gave her some hope. It was a large utility closet, and in the rear wall was a panel, 2 feet square and flush to the floor. When she removed the panel, she found a crawl space that appeared to be an access point to the cabin's geothermal system. The crawl space was cold, a good sign that she'd found an uninsulated transitional space between interior and exterior. Elith flicked on her light and poked her head and shoulders in. The space was tight, vertically, and sloped gradually upward as far as she could see, which wasn't far. The darkness swallowed her light. It took her some time to explore, given that she had to crawl on her belly, barely had room to lift her head, and was constantly concerned about making any noise. Eventually, she found a vent in an exterior wall, just large enough for her to squeeze through. With ample care, Elith worked the vent free from the inside. She'd lost her sense of direction in the close darkness of the crawlspace, but when she identified that the vent led out under the elevated front porch, her mental map of the cabin snapped into place. She had her route out. Now she just needed to get her tools and to buy herself enough time to perform her survey. The journey back to her room was much faster now that she understood the space. There she gathered her supplies while mentally working out a timetable. A couple of hours to collect data, plus whatever time she'd need to move throughout the area unseen. After she had a rough plan in place, she put in another appearance with Ame. Through carefully directed, casual conversation, Elith learned Hawk would be returning around dark and seeded the expectation that she'd spend the day sleeping in her room. It was just after midday when she emerged from the vent beneath the porch, dressed in her infiltration gear. Elith slipped across the open ground to the tree line, but hadn't made it far from the cabin before she discovered a complicating factor. Despite Hawk's suggestion that the detail was no longer concerned about her identity, they didn't seem to be taking any chances. Here and there, through the trees, she spotted pairs of sentries forming a loose cordon around the cabin. After a few minutes of observation, though, it wasn't completely clear whether they were meant to keep her in or others out. She crept through the forest with painstaking care, her every sense straining as she continually switched her focus between her broad surroundings and that which was immediately before her, as though she were hunting for a lost coin behind enemy lines. Collecting a variety of readings would help her build an environmental profile of the area. The greater the variety, the clearer the picture. But Elith knew every sample she took would be hard won, and getting caught would be catastrophic. The result was a scattershot collection, far from her usual methodical approach. She prowled through the woods, ever vigilant for sentries, using a handheld scanner to take samples and readings as opportunities appeared, from the soil, from leaves, flowers, and stems, from flowered branches and woody fungal blooms, from a gang of emerald-coated beetles and a peculiar six-winged moth. Despite her limited access, her reach into the mountain's environmental network was surprising. In-depth analysis would have to wait until she returned to the cabin, but she felt confident the data would be useful, despite the haphazard process of its collection. And as she ranged farther from the cabin, she couldn't escape the sense that though the forest growth wasn't agricultural in origin, it couldn't quite be classified as fully wild either. The air had an evergreen fragrance, tinged with earthen notes of moss and mushroom, vibrant, full of life. There were no obvious signs of direct cultivation, but much of the tangle and snarl of undergrowth she would have expected was absent, and the healthy balance and richness of biodiversity suggested not a forest left to run wild, but rather a light touch of intentional, mindful stewardship. It was rare to see such harmony between humans and their environment, and harmony was truly the best way to describe it. Elith kept having the impression of musical overtones, as though the joining of earth and root and water were blending together to produce some higher resonance, emergent rather than created. The natural wealth of the area drew her onward, even while her internal clock began to warn her that her time afield was growing short. A chance encounter alerted her to just how short it truly was. Elith was lying alongside the half-rotted remains of a fallen tree, cataloging a fringed purple moss when the sound of movement interrupted her. She rolled quickly up underneath the soft wooded trunk, tucking herself into the little space that remained. Two sentries approached, striding loudly through the forest and passing within 20 or 30 feet of her.
"Staring at empty trails about as long as I can stand," one was saying to the other.
"This should be the last rotation," the other answered. "Wardens are coming back in now. Think they're going to wrap this all up pretty soon."
"You think they're going to get commended or interrogated?"
"Some of both, probably.
The conversation fell silent after that. Elith remained completely still until the guards had passed some distance away and then eased out of her hiding place. Judging from the sky, she guessed she still had another 2 hours at least before dark. Plenty of time, if everyone had kept to their schedules. But she had no way to know how close Hawk and his fellow wardens were to their cabin now. It would have been only a 2 or 3 minute jog, if only she could have moved with such speed. As it was, the most Elith could afford was a low loping walk as she bounded from cover to cover, with brief pauses to survey the area before moving again. Hope waned as she approached the cabin. Before she could even see it, she could hear voices, and when she finally got eyes on the place, she saw Ame at the rear entrance, talking with Hawk and Kitu as they dismounted from their striders. Judging from their body language, it didn't appear that they'd yet discovered her absence. But if they were planning to go directly to her room, there was no way she'd be able to beat them there. Any amount of time she could buy herself would be worth it. Elith's eyes went to the trees surrounding the cabin. There had to be something she could use. And there, not far from the trail leading to the cabin, she spotted a mighty oak, forked in the middle and heavy-branched. The left fork leaned slightly, and its branches shaded the trail. The tree was old, 100 years or more judging from its size, and it had plenty of life remaining in it. But in time, the weight of those limbs would become too much. Elith formed the image in her mind, and with it, the words. There was no need to shout. A quiet word in the deep language carried power enough. Nature runs its course. Even the mighty diminish. A moment after she'd spoken, the tree creaked. At first, the wardens paid no mind, but the creaking grew in intensity, and there was no wind to cause it. Hawk turned to look in its direction just as the largest branch twisted and sheared, plummeting to the ground. The impact thundered. The limb was so thick, it would have been easy to mistake it for a full tree on its own. And it was partially blocking the trail. Elith's purpose was met. After a few moments of staring, Hawk and Kitu mounted back up into their striders and headed down to take a look, presumably to move it out of the way. Elith didn't wait. She couldn't cover her tracks as well as she would have liked. By the time she'd navigated the crawl space, already she could hear the footsteps on the floor above. The vent she'd hastily crammed back into place, so too she barely secured the panel. She left the utility closet and locked the door behind her. Above her, she could hear someone walking toward the stairs. The footsteps above, almost echoes of her own as she padded down the hall to her room. She reached her door. It was locked. Of course it was. She'd locked it herself. The door at the top of the stairs opened. The lock on her room was mechanical, simple, but required actual picking instead of mere override. Elith closed her eyes, focused on the feeling in her fingers, and tried to ignore the footsteps on the stairs. The lock clicked. Elith swept into her room, closing the door as quickly as she could without making noise, and relocked it. Immediately, she stripped off her hood and vest. She'd just unfastened her pants when the knock came. It was a quiet knock at first. Tentative. Elith didn't respond, using every second she could to conceal every sign of her outing. A second knock, this one louder. "Ah," Elith said, trying her best to sound as though she'd been woken from a deep sleep.
"Elia?"
came Hawk's voice through the door.
"Yes?"
Elith laid her gear on the floor of the closet, threw her clothes over the top.
"Sorry to wake you, but it looks like you're leaving early."
"Oh,"
she said, while she scrambled the covers on her bed.
"I need to, I need to put some pants on."
And now that she'd had the conversation, she was free to make noise and to breathe again. She grabbed the clothes she'd worn the previous day, calmed herself while she dressed. And with one arm in her top coat, she opened her door before putting it on the rest of the way. Hawk was still standing there.
"You okay?"
he asked. Elith nodded.
"The knock just startled me,"
Guess I was sleeping pretty hard. He eyed her for a moment longer than was comfortable. And I dreamt my ship was crashing again. Except it came down on the cabin and somehow I was in both, she added. It felt real.
Top half of a tree came down outside, he said. Maybe you heard it in your sleep.
Oh, Elith said. Maybe. Storm come through?
He shook his head.
Just rot, I guess. He pointed to the floor outside her room.
Brought that down for you.
She leaned out and saw her pack resting against the wall.
Thank you. I'm leaving?
Soon, yeah. Might have time for a quick meal if you're hungry.
Well, if it's not too much trouble.
He nodded and headed back toward the stairs.
Gonna have to feed the crew anyway, he said over his shoulder. One more plate won't hurt.
Thank you again, Elith said as he disappeared around the corner. She lingered by the door a moment, then pulled her pack inside and closed the door behind her once more. From what she could tell, they'd honored their word not to go through her things. Everything was still as she'd left it, apart from some expected shifting. Even the frost oak cutting was there, though it had dropped most of its withered leaves. She pulled out her local nav tracker and dropped a marker at her current location. Even if she never needed to come back, she knew the information might prove valuable. After that, Elith took some time to repack and get cleaned up, then joined Hawk upstairs in time to help him set the table. The rest of the crew still hadn't come in yet, and though she'd hoped to have one more opportunity to talk with them about their time on the mountain, it looked like she wasn't going to get the chance. Hawk was just pulling the meal off the stove when a distant rumble caught their attention. He looked toward the front of the cabin, then back to Elith, and then walked over to peer out of a side window.
"Guess we're not going to have time for that meal after all," he said.
"That's for me?" Elith asked. He nodded.
"Better get your stuff. They're not going to want to wait around."
Elith retrieved her belongings from her room downstairs. By the time she'd returned, a skimmer had already landed on the gravel pad behind the cabin, and through the rear window, she could see two men. One waited by the skimmer as the other approached. Elith identified the make and model of the vessel reflexively, her mind dredging up the basic capabilities. It was a small, older Shelton H-class, 12 feet long, boxy, and utilitarian, its red and white exterior faded and worn from use. A mid-range civilian craft, planet-bound, fairly commonplace. Nothing that would attract attention. Similarly, both men were dressed in plain clothes, and to most eyes, they would have blended right in with any crowd. To Elith, though, their bearing and attentiveness to their surroundings made them stand out.
"They're going to drop you at a public pad on the south edge of Orness," Hawk said. "I assume you can find your way from there?"
"You're not coming along?" she asked. Hawk shook his head. Elith felt a wave of disappointment and was surprised by the emotion. She hadn't developed any particular attachment to Hawk, but the abrupt arrival of the detail made her feel unprepared to say goodbye, as though now that the moment was upon them, anything she said would be inadequate.
"I hate to disappear like this," Elith said. "I was hoping to thank everyone before I had to go."
"Leaving in the same manner as you arrived," he said with a quick smile. "Sudden lack. I'll pass along your regards." The man from the skimmer reached the back door and knocked sharply. Hawk handed her a small, sealed container. It was square, with a flexible lid, and warm to the touch.
"Something for the road," he said.
Elith accepted it, and realized that he'd packed up her dinner to take along. She leaned forward and gave him a brief, one-armed hug. He straightened at the contact, surprised by the gesture and uncertain how to react.
"Thank you, Hawk," she said. "Thank you for looking after me."
He took a step back when she released him.
"All right," he said. "Well, best of luck out there."
Hope we didn't hold you up too much.
I'll be fine, she said. Sorry for any trouble I caused you and your friends.
Hawk shook his head, dismissing any such concerns, and walked over to the door.
Goodbye, Aliyah, he said.
Goodbye, Hawk, she said. He opened the door and Elith walked out.
No words of greeting were exchanged. Hawk nodded to the man standing outside, who in turn silently gestured for Elith to head to the skimmer. She crossed the short span to the landing pad, and as she approached, the second man opened the entry into the rear passenger compartment. He was thin and smiled pleasantly when she neared, but he had an energetic vigilance about him, even in his casual movements. Elith understood why such a man might be part of a security detail. It made him seem dangerous, despite his otherwise innocuous appearance. She climbed in and sat in the seat nearest the exit, placing her pack on the seat next to her toward the fore of the ship. The passenger compartment had four seats arrayed in pairs along either side of the ship, facing the center. Neither man joined her. Both sat in the forward compartment, which was almost completely separated from the rear area by a metal panel, save for an opening in the top third through which she could see them. The engines kicked in almost immediately, and in a few moments they began their rise. Elith watched through the small bubble window next to her, taking in her last view of the little cabin that had been her home for a night. It was hard to believe it had been only a single day since she'd arrived, and she found herself strangely sad to have had her time there come to such a sudden end. Hawk hadn't followed them out, but she could still see his silhouette in the window of the cabin door, watching as the skimmer lifted off the ground, keeping an eye on her, even now. The skimmer gained height enough to clear the treetops and not much more before it surged forward and banked sharply. Elith's view of the cabin was replaced by the sea of trees racing along beneath them, dark waves golden-tipped in the last rays of the sun. She sat back and turned her attention to what lay ahead. Hawk had told her they'd be dropping her off somewhere outside Orinnes. He hadn't given her any idea of how far outside it would be, and she hadn't asked. But public pads typically had easy access to further transportation into the heart of the nearest city. The south edge wasn't the closest point between the preserve and Orinnes, but that choice made sense if they were being cautious about their point of origin, which she had to assume they were. She considered making use of the navigation instrument in her pack, but quickly dismissed the idea. The two men in the front weren't likely to react well to her using any sort of mapping tool, and she didn't want to risk raising their suspicions by trying to use it surreptitiously. Instead, she leaned forward again to look out the window, judged their velocity from the speed of the terrain moving by, and made a rough estimate of their travel time. Not that she knew exactly where they were going, nor, for that matter, precisely where she'd been. Still, she remembered enough from her extensive study of the maps during her planning to have a general idea, and her sense of direction was excellent. That was how she realized, as the sun disappeared and the land below plunged into darkness, that they weren't taking her to Orinnes at all.